Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one. How, Stone?
Hey, this is going to be a fun segment, man. We have back in the studio no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone from, let me see if I can say this right, Andera Academy, Miss Lisa Smith. So we're going to get a chance to visit with her in a little bit. She's got some neat things going, so I'm looking forward to catching up with her. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Director of Client Services, AKQA, or do we AKQA? Say AQUA?
No, you got it right the first time.
Okay, Director of Client Services with AKQA, please join me in welcoming to the program, Mr. Chip Gross. How you doing, man?
Good, thank you. Really happy to be here today.
Now, AKQA, is there something behind that name?
It's actually the
Alaska the questions and answers.
Right. Well, actually, we used to joke around and say it was all known questions answered. But the initials of our founder, Ijaz Abed. And he actually has two middle names, so there you get the K and the Q.
So how much time every day do you have explaining that?
A good bit, actually. That tends to be something I just try to get through whenever I'm going out for a new business conversation, because it usually comes up right up front.
So now, what are you guys doing for folks?
We're doing a lot of different things. In terms of AKQA, some people consider us a digital agency. We tend to describe ourselves as a ideas and innovation company, because we really do focus on kind of the genesis of an idea, which in some cases may be digital, it may not be. And then there's kind of the aspect of innovation, which is actually taking that idea and translating it into something that people can touch and feel and use. So that's really part of what tends to drive a lot of our work.
Now, have you always been in this field?
I have. I've actually been in the digital marketing space for about 20 years. So, when I started, it was everyone talking about
a
website. Yeah, right? Literally. And it's kind of evolved into conversations around, what's Twitter? What's Facebook? And mm-hmm. now we're talking about the Internet of Things and everything that's connected. So it's been a tremendous just kind of transition, as things have gone through change.
Now, is AKQA, are they new to Atlanta, or have they been around here a while?
Well, we're not new to the space. We are new to Atlanta. So we've been in Atlanta for just about 2 years. I think October, makes it exactly 2 years. And I actually joined AKQA in August of 2012. And then we kind of announced the formation of the Atlanta office in October.
Where are they based?
We're actually based in San Francisco. And then locally, we're actually right in Midtown, right next to the
heart of things.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great location.
So now, what's it like working for a company that has its headquarters outside of Atlanta?
It's been great. I mean, Yeah, really. If like only that was...
That's Atlanta. So we don't have to worry about them. That's some southern town.
Right. But, we've got about 13 offices globally. So even though we're based in San Francisco, a large part of our agency team is actually, spread across the globe. So, they do kind of... have a way of kind of keeping us all linked together and operating very much as a global agency. But we do have a good bit of flexibility in trying to do what we feel is best for our clients, who may be based here versus based in the UK or in Shanghai or some other part of the globe.
So now, when you're in Atlanta here and you're working the Atlanta market, what is the benefits you tell your prospective clients that they should hook up with you guys?
Well, I mean, there's a few different things. I mean, the nice thing is, when we first thought about coming into Atlanta...
Because there's no shortage of, you're probably aware, of digital marketing agencies here in Atlanta.
There are a number of agencies. We do think of ourselves a little bit differently than some of the other players who have been in town. I think, from our standpoint, we differentiate ourselves a bit because we actually create a lot of things that people use actively. One thing that we have worked on over the last 4 years is actually our relationship with Delta. And we've designed and built their iPhone and their iPad apps, and there are things that people carry with them every day.
Right.
And
so you get kind of deeper into their company than just kind of a vendor relationship?
We really do. I mean, we really do see it as a partnership, and we really think that distinguishes us a bit from some of the other agencies.
That's like a hired gun. to come in and just solve a marketing problem?
Well, it's more than a hired gun, because we really do want to get, it, to your point, deeper into
right, that's
the
what I'm saying, is that yeah. that's what a typical marketing relationship is right. this person that, you know, make me this ad or billboard and
right.
or in and out.
Exactly.
And you're kind of more immersed in their kind of core business?
We are, because a good bit of the work that we do is actually in the creation of things that people use versus just the advertising or the communication of a benefit or, right. you know, something that they're doing. And I think that in many ways kind of translates back into just the philosophy of AKQA overall. I mean, we've always been focused on doing things that create closer relationships between our customers' brands and their customers. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that Ajaz, our founder, talks a lot about is, you know, the best advertising not being advertising, you know, mm-hmm. really being creating that deep connection,
right.
you know, with a brand and through, you know, the experiences that you create, you know, whether that be an app or some type of, you know, interaction that you facilitate through a social network or in some cases, things that you do in the physical built environment that create that connectivity between, the consumer and, you know, whatever device of right. that they have, and then the experience that the brand actually creates.
Now, do you work mainly with B2C clients?
We do. For the most part, we're a little bit more B2C focused. I mean, a lot of our clients, like we have a very long-standing relationship with Nike. Audi's another client of ours. Locally, clearly we do work with Delta. We've done work with Universal theme parks out of Orlando. We've done some work.
Do you have an office in Orlando as well?
We actually don't. Atlanta has kind of been in some ways a hub for the Southeast.
Oh, so you do that work out of here?
We do. Yeah, we have been in the past. And when we need to, we can tap the other offices within the network. But mm-hmm. usually anything kind of south of maybe Virginia.
That's your
problem. All the way down to Florida. Yeah, then even west.
That's Chip's problem.
Exactly. I like to have those types of problems.
So how does the engagement start? What are some of the early steps in the engagement?
It usually starts with them having either some type of initiative that they want to bring to life, or in some cases, it's just an idea. I mean, one of the examples we use with Delta is it came to us, and it was very early on in kind of the, you know, rise of mobile. And, the request that we got was, you know, how do we create something that's going to be useful and helpful to our business travelers and takes advantage of, you know, the fact that they've all got now these mobile phones that they're putting in their pockets right. and carrying with them. And, for us, that initially turned into, well, let's create something that lives on their phone and that can facilitate the process of them, you know, before their day of travel, through their day of travel, and then, you know, when they arrive, you know, wherever they're going. And, that manifested itself in the iPhone app, and then it kind of translated into, you know, everything from, you know, developing, the new version of the kiosk that they have in airport. We've been doing work with them. We designed and built their iPad app. We've done work with them actually redesigning the physical boarding pass.
You know, wow.
It's something that we actually got a chance to do, which, again, is a reason why we really don't hinge as much on focusing on digital as a description of what we do versus...
Right, boarding pass doesn't really fit under digital,
right.
does it?
Exactly, yeah.
So now, when you're working on an app or something like that for a client, how do you rein them in terms of just kind of... On an app, you can do anything, but you got to say no to a lot of things.
Right.
So how do you kind of manage that?
Well, I think in many ways, you know, a lot of what we've always touted is the focus on consumer-centered or customer-centered design. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, whatever you're going to be putting out in many cases, because we do a lot of B2C work, is going to be used and hopefully loved by, you know, their end customers. So a lot of what we try to do is stay focused on, you know, what particular business problem are we trying to solve, and how is this solution, whether it be an app or something else, going to help address that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in some cases, what we do is we do, customer testing. We've done usability testing as we go through the process of
But doesn't the client
out.
Always want to, like, creep in lots
do.
Of extras? Like, oh, what about, we got them already, so why don't we just add
right.
this element, too? And don't
right.
forget to tell them about this. That's important.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
next month, we're going to be having this happen, so no, you got to throw that in. Does that ever happen?
Oh, it happens all the time. And, you know, part of the challenge is making sure that they stay grounded in, again, the objective of whatever they're trying to work on. And also just the fact that, you know, they brought us in as a partner because they respect what we do and the knowledge that we bring to it. And, usually we're able to help kind of get to the right solution through a combination of, you know, leveraging what's right for the customer, as well as keeping in mind what are the most meaningful ways that this is going to drive business value for them too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the things with a lot of the apps that we do is really focus on, you know, trying to keep it simple, but also acknowledging, you know, that over time, this thing will grow and it'll evolve and it'll kind of morph itself based on how it's used.
And then get that real data instead of us trying to guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Analytics is a big part of, you know, what we use to guide not just the initial creation, but then the ongoing evolution of, right, yeah, whatever digital solution.
So I guess when you tell them, look, this is going to be, it's not the end. This is just the start of this. So it's going to keep iterating. So don't worry. We'll get all that later on.
Well, I mean, that's very much the truth. You know, as you work through these different, you know, challenges, you know, people have to understand that sometimes it's important to start with something small, you know, learn, in some cases fail quickly, and then make it, you know, what it should be so that it actually drives that value.
It does what the outcome that they desire.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So in a former life, you were in-house with some larger organizations.
I was, yeah. I actually spent about 5 years at UPS, both in their digital group as well as their new product concepts group. You know, worked with IBM, and that was kind of a hybrid role because, you know, that was at the time that they were, you know, rolling out the whole e-business side of their, you know, of IBM. So there was kind of the internal education around, you know, what e-business is and, you know, what it all means. And then there was also going out and working very much like an agency and helping to, you know, convince people to choose IBM to, you know, develop, you know, their new digital solutions. So, yeah, that was definitely a
So you've been on both sides of the desk there, huh?
Right, right. Yeah, it gives me a little bit of appreciation for those clients that want to put a lot of different things into their solutions, and I can understand that.
And work through the politics of getting a decision, right, and getting things done. You understand that.
Yeah.
Now, is there anything you're especially proud of that you've done lately?
Well, I think for me personally, it's the you know, kind of genesis and creation of, you know, our local presence. I actually was working for another agency before I joined AKQA, and you know, for me, it was interesting to take the challenge of, you know, starting basically with me in a, you know, rented suite and turning that into, you know, a significant presence here in the Atlanta, or in the Southeast now. Mm-hmm. And just the team that we've got in place now, the work that we've been doing and continue to do, as well as, you know, us being, you know, very viable and vibrant part of the AKQA network is, I mean, for me, that's been, you know, an amazing.
So you started the Atlanta branch?
I did. Yeah, I was hired back in August of 2012. And
so they said, okay, Chip.
Yeah.
Here's some business cards.
Well, the good thing is our relationship with
we'll
Delta.
We'll put Atlanta on our website.
Right.
Now we have Atlanta, so you can use this website.
Yeah.
Go ahead. We want to... $10 million by the end of the year.
Well, no, this is...
It wasn't quite that severe, but there was definitely some pressure around creating value and, you know, creating, you know, a new part of the network. So
how'd you attack that?
Yeah, how does the sales and marketing thing work for you guys, especially when you were getting it off the ground like that?
Right. Well, I mean, it clearly was a big challenge. The good thing is that we had some really great partners, you know, in terms of our existing relationship.
So you already
with Delta.
Had... Oh, so Delta was around already.
Delta, we've actually worked with them for the last 4 years. So... they were actually
the guy who sold that from San Francisco. High fives
DC,
for that, right?
DC in this
DC.
Case. And that was kind of another aspect of it too.
How did he go? Well, Chip's going to be handling that account now. How'd that conversation go?
Well, the good thing is we were able to partner and you know, grow out our presence locally, as well as, you know, take advantage of the fact we had an awesome team in DC to, you know, kind of work with us. So.
So now your first few days, I guess, were going into Delta and introducing yourself to everybody.
That was
right?
Part of it. Yeah, going to a number of different companies here in town, but yeah, also trying to find the right people to create that right team for Delta.
Oh, so you had to hire the people too?
We were
responsible for that as well?
Yeah, kind of all aspects of creating the agency presence.
So you don't just have account services, you have the actual creative people as well?
Yeah,
here
well,
in Atlanta?
The way that works is I'm director of client services, and then we have a managing director in D.C. who's responsible for both D.C. and Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, in many ways, I kind of functioned as the Atlanta managing director, working very closely with him.
Right.
And another really great part of it was we had a phenomenal creative director who was in D.C., and decided to relocate and, you know, kind of take advantage of some of the Southern hospitality.
Yeah, I'm sure that's kind of an easy move, right?
It was easier than I think he probably expected. And, I mean, he loves Atlanta.
Yeah,
and
cost of living, the quality of life.
Right.
I mean, I would imagine.
Yeah, and he worked on some of the Delta work, too. So I think that also gave them some comfort that, you know, they were going to be getting a team that was very much, you know, kind of focused on, you know, them as a client and also
Probably looked like they were getting super service then.
Right.
You know, you're bringing a creative guy in, you're building an office there.
Exactly.
So I'm sure they felt loved.
Right. Yeah,
so now,
he's been a great partner, too.
Now, when you're going out to strangers, how have you been handling that?
That part has been working pretty well. I mean, the nice thing is our reputation kind of globally is a major asset. I mean, we've been around for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been there kind of since the beginning as it relates to kind of the
digital, right?
The interactive space. Yeah. So a lot of cases, yeah, and one of the reasons that we came to Atlanta was a lot of clients were actually saying, hey, AKQA, we love your work. We love what you do, but we'd really love it if you were a little bit closer to us.
Right.
So it's really given us, you know, entree to, you know, a lot of the usual suspects in town, you know, to explore ways of working together. So that actually hasn't been as challenging as you might think, just because
we
have a
reputation,
strong reputation, and a really strong support throughout the network.
And how do you serve the business community as a way of introducing yourself, just in general?
Yeah, well, we've been involved in a number of different things. I mean, within the interactive space, the advertising space, we've actually joined the Atlanta Ad Club, mm-hmm. which has been another way for us to kind of network within the, you know, the local Atlanta Southeast digital market. You know, where it makes sense, we've also participated in conferences. We were just at, we were at Mobility Live. Then also we just participated in, used to be Digital Atlanta, now
right.
it's Southwired. We did
right.
a little bit of a talk around mobile and the connected home.
So you do speaking, that's what
we
you...
do. And actually next week we're going to be co-presenting with Universal Orlando at the iMedia Breakthrough Conference out in Stone Mountain.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
That's my cool. mountain.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
It'll be at your deck of the week.
So you've mentioned mobile several times in the conversation. Mm-hmm. What other trends, what are some new things happening in this space that we ought to maybe keep our eyes open for?
Well, for us, you know, it's all about connectivity. And, you know, one of the things we actually talked about at Southwired was, you know, the emerging Internet of Things, you know, theme, for lack of a better term. And, you know, we've really looked at all the different ways, and actually one of the clients that we're doing some work with, you know, has a big presence in that area. And it's about, you know, everything that you can connect to and, you know, creating kind of meaningful, you know, digital solutions that make, you know, your toaster of the future, you know, interact with your phone where it makes sense. Or in some cases, you know, we've done work with Philips around...
Well, you have a fitness tracker on
I
your
do,
head.
Actually.
I mean, that's one of the Internet of Things, right?
It is. It really is. The whole quantified self-movement is a big aspect of it. And we actually work with Nike on different parts of launching the Fuel Band. So that's something that we also see a lot of value in.
Now, when you're working with a client in that level of Internet of Things, now, are you coming in there to actually... work on the technology of those things, or are you?
We are.
Oh, so it's beyond the marketing or the advertising or the promoting
right.
of it. It's the actual, the technology behind
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And that's, again, what we feel like that kind of differentiates us a bit, because we don't just start with a great idea and then we turn to someone and say, hey, you guys go
implement. Build this.
We actually do both the, you know, conceptualization, the design, as well as the actual application development, you know, when whatever technology makes the most sense. So mobile has tended to be a big place for us in terms of, you know, Android, iOS, you know, mobile.
Right, but it's one thing to build an app
yes.
for, and you know, an iPhone, and another thing is to build a beacon that can,
right.
you know, interact with the iPhone.
Right, exactly.
So you know, so you're working on that side as well.
We are. Actually, one interesting thing that we just did within the network through our relationship with Nike is we actually partnered with them to implement an entirely interactive and digital basketball court, which is something that you wouldn't really think of an advertising agency doing.
Right.
But it just goes to show, you know, just how integrated and, you know, interconnected, you know, the world of kind of marketing is with the world of technology.
But I would imagine that there's a short list of marketing, digital marketing firms that would get involved in the, that side of the technology.
Luckily
to that
for
level.
Us, yeah. yeah.
right? So there I guess are. That is a big differentiator on your guys' part.
Exactly. And it's something that you know, I think has really served us well over the 20 years because we've been able to really do a lot of innovative things because we understand, you know, just how to bring it to life and, you know, how to create something, you know, that has a physical component as well as a digital component. So I think that's something that, you know, has further helped to differentiate us in the market.
Now, you mentioned going to conferences and concerts.
Do those too?
Conferences and speaking. Do you do that globally as an agency as well?
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys put on your own conferences?
We do more client-focused events than kind of broader, kind of all-encompassing conferences. We do what we call inside events, you know, in different geographies. Like we actually did one in New York not too long ago. We've done a number in the UK.
So what happens in one of those?
Well, usually what we do in it kind of varies depending on the topic, but what we generally do is we bring in kind of different thought leaders from within the agency to, you know, kind of take time with
like
our,
a deep dive in a specific
it can
area?
Be. It really depends on what themes we're covering. You know, in some cases, you know, we might be talking about social connection and things that we've done, you know, with Nike, for example.
And then who are invited?
Usually our clients. We usually try to invite current clients and then also prospective clients that we think you know, might benefit from the topic that we're talking about.
Right.
And a lot of it tends to be very future-focused. You know, I think that's one of the other things that kind of philosophically differentiates us a bit because we really do look at the future for inspiration and focus on where the kind of things are going versus think about where things are currently.
Right.
So, you know, in many cases we'll bring in, you know, Ajaz or our CEO or chairman, you know, Tom Bedecre, and those guys have a phenomenal amount of experience, you know, within, you know, the advertising, if not the digital space. And then, you know, a lot of cases we'll bring in kind of our, you know, either kind of executive leads, you know, our technology lead to also talk about different dimensions.
So it's very education focused.
It tends to be, yeah. I mean,
but it's also a great way to network with all those company people.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think that's part of why we try to keep it small because we want it to be intimate. We want people to really get a lot of value at it.
Like 20 companies?
No, it's usually bigger than that. And the one that we just did in New York, I want to say it was probably 150 folks.
And that was like an all day?
Usually it's a morning event. So we'll start kind of with breakfast and then we'll have kind of our, you know, slate of conversations. And then we'll usually end with a lunch where we allow, you know, and kind of facilitate more networking.
That sounds like a great event.
I love going to them. And, you know, our clients usually have really great things to say about them.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. So where can our listeners go to learn more, have a meaningful conversation with you or somebody on your team?
Yeah. Well, the best place to start is probably our website, which is akqa.com. And that gives kind of a little bit of a rundown on our work, you know, where we're located, as well as, you know, what's new and interesting from an AKQA standpoint. And then, as you would imagine, yeah, we've got, you know, presence within all the different social channels, you know, Facebook and Twitter. You know, some of our different executives, you know, clearly do a lot of their own communications, which, you know, also helps out. Our founder, Jaz, he released a book back in 2012 called Velocity, which kind of underscores our philosophy around speed and, you know, what that means for digital. And he's actually got another book coming out called Limitless, which kind of takes that theme and, you know, further expands on it.
And can we get to both books through Amazon?
You can find Velocity on Amazon for sure. I think Limitless may still be in the process of being released. But, you know, they're both acknowledged on the website. And also all the great work that we do within the network is also featured there.
Well, I'm anxious to read Velocity, as you can.
It's a great book. It really is.
That's his thing, is speed.
I'm a big believer in speed. So is there a Kindle version?
There is.
Okay, well, you just made a sale. I'll read that this evening. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you come in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I want to have you back. I want you to come in with a client, because you have local clients.
We do.
What do you think, Lee, like if we had Chip and we had a client and they talked about the engagement and the relationship, which
sure. And some future thing.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah. So, wouldn't that be cool?
You'd be up for that, Chip?
Yeah. I'd love to continue the conversation.
All right. Well, we'll make that happen. Hey, listen, hang out with us while we visit with our next guest.
Sounds good.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have back with us from Andera Seminars, Miss Lisa Smith. What did you learn in that last segment, Miss Lisa?
Wow. I learned that I have a lot of catching up to do.
You don't have any Internet of Things to share?
Any Internet of Things? Is that a word?
That is a big word.
Okay.
Chip can inform you about that a little bit.
I will learn about that later. Yeah, actually, most of the business that we do is on the Internet, actually. So sure. It's just not as high tech as what Chip was describing.
So why don't you share a little bit about what you're up to?
Okay. Well, Andera Seminars is a training and development company that we launched a few years back. And we've sort of began branching into a variety of areas. E-learning has been a big area we're branching into because of how huge e-learning is these days, right?
Yeah. Well, everybody's busy. It's hard to get them all to travel somewhere to see a training seminar, right? So this way they can watch them where they are.
Exactly. And even within the e-learning community, you know, the old days of someone sitting down and watching an hour-long presentation is even over, you know.
Sure.
So we're taking all of our old content and we're sizing it down into 2, 8, 7, you know, 10-minute chunks.
Right.
And we're putting it out there like that as well so that folks can really, you know, take it by the bite, or as we call it, the spoonful.
Right.
So we have spoonfuls of this and spoonfuls of that we deal with. So we've really been moving in that area a lot, working with some clients and having a good time. And we decided to go ahead and launch a little pet project called the Andera Academy. And the Academy is sort of containing all of our e-learning content, but we're going to really focus the Academy on a special group of folks out in our sector, which is those who have either been victims, survivors of abuse, or maybe folks who are at really high risk of falling into that mm-hmm. category. And so we're really excited about that. You may know that October is Domestic Violence Month.
Right. Are these people like employees of companies that are buying the e-learning, or these are just individuals out there that have that need?
Yeah, these are just individuals. These are folks out there who are maybe going to see an attorney or a counselor or someone in law enforcement or a pastor.
And they don't have resources to kind of educate themselves about how to extricate themselves from the situation?
Yeah, one of the biggest reasons as a victim never becomes a survivor is because they say that they can't leave their abuser due to financial concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they don't have the confidence due to low level of education that they can go out and at least get a job that's $10 an hour where they can, you know, get out there and, you know, buy a little apartment and live. And so they stay with the abuser. And many times that includes children or other extended family members staying in the home.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally come from 12 years of domestic violence. And I woke up one morning I figuratively woke up one morning after an abuse session, as I'll put it. And I was in my 20s and I kind of looked down the road 20 years and I thought to myself, wow, you have a really bleak future ahead of you. And right then I knew that I needed to get a new future. And so I went out and I started doing everything I could to educate myself. But this was before the internet. This is when I had to actually try to find a way to get to a school and go to a library and hope that the keys weren't hidden from me and that the phone wasn't ripped out of the wall and, you know, those types of things. And so it took me a long time to get to where I needed to be so that I could make that new future for myself and my children. And when I finally did, I was able to get free and I had that level of economic independence is what we call it, where I felt like I could stand on my own 2 feet. And mm-hmm. so then that finally made it for me. And so now I want to, you know, really be able to give that back to folks and really pay that forward and help people go through that same situation, but not have to wait 12, 15, 20 years in an abusive setting to do that.
So now do you think that the people that are going through it, are they going to, they have to have access to some technology, right? Do you think that's going to be a challenge?
You know, it may be a challenge for some. These days, so many people have.
Oh, I guess your cell phone is
Yeah, they can do it on the cell phone and iPad. If they can, you know, if that's impossible when they're at a library or if they're in a workplace,
right.
you know, they can access their shelters. Many times will at least have one computer where they have, you know, some access or some Wi-Fi that, you know, someone could come in and use. And that'll be another need that we'll address too as we go forward and get more and more donations into our foundation that we've set up. We've set up the Andera Foundation to handle these types of donations. And if we find an organization out there who's got a lot of need but very few resources, we'll try to drum some resources up for them.
And then in this situation, this isn't just Atlanta-centric, right? That anybody could access. This is the beauty of the internet, right, is it can be accessed, this content, from anywhere?
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest pieces to our whole program here is that every local community organization who deals with any sort of violence or abuse or anything of that nature, they all have some sort of a program where you can come in and they'll teach you to do a resume and they'll show you some videos and they'll give you some interview skills and those types of things. And,
right.
and they're good, but they rely many times on volunteers and scheduling issues. And then the person can't get a ride to the, you know, to come to the training. And so by being able to offer this online,
right.
we may solve some of those issues.
So you're going to partner with all these agencies around the country?
Yes. And we're going to make this available. And we've already, you know, for months now, we've been putting the word out just to see what kind of response we would get if we opened
right.
this up. Would anyone use it?
Right.
You know, it might be a great idea, but if no one uses it, then, you know.
Right.
And we are just getting so many people saying, put us on your list. As soon as it launches, let us know.
Are you working on the content now? That's where you're at?
Right. And we're just about to finish all that up. So as soon as that's done, we're going to be launching. And it's going to launch with about 250 programs.
Wow.
Yeah.
But and that's
250,
all like,
you're talking about 250 separate courses?
Courses that
of
people
like
can
two
take.
To 8 minute
wow.
videos?
Anywhere, yeah, anywhere from 2 minutes to, some of them will be closer to an hour, but we're going to try to keep them in that zone of under
right.
30 minutes. Yeah.
yeah well, I mean, that's marvelous that you're doing that and very disturbing to me that there's that much content to be had
right.
around it. That, I mean, that is a robust curriculum.
Yeah, it really is. And we'll have a variety of different you know, paths that a learner could take. So if a learner wants to go down a path where maybe they have some education already and they really want to get out there and learn more about, let's just say, for instance, HR law, human resources law,
right.
because if I just knew a little bit more, I could get that next leg up and get that job.
Right.
Then that person can go down that path. But we may have the person who had maybe no opportunity to even finish high school and they're going through with maybe a 10th grade education, wanting to get some basic skills.
Right. Or
learn
just
how
get
to,
a GED. Or
yeah,
right?
learn how to use Word and PowerPoint and
right.
Excel to be able to get into that entry-level position. And then, you know, so we're going to have a variety of different paths for mm-hmm. people to take.
So, I mean, this is almost a silver lining to your background, right? You've gone through, you're uniquely qualified to be able to put this
mm-hmm.
together.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I know
right.
I know what's needed. I know what they need. I know where
right.
the need is. And we'll also have videos that we'll put on our learning management system, which just specifically address the abused. You know, how are you going to cope with no longer being a captive, which may sound odd terminology to use to people who have not been in that situation, but it's sort of like, remember when East Germany and West Germany split, or united, I should say, when they were reunified, the wall
right.
came down. Everybody was so happy. I lived there at the time, so I can speak to this
person.
Oh,
you were living in Germany?
Mm-hmm. I was living in Germany when the wall came down. And everybody was like, oh, so excited, and CNN was all like buzzing. And it was really a great thing. However, if you lived there at the time, what you saw was all of these people in the eastern side of the country who had never had choices, who suddenly had
yeah.
choices and opportunities that they didn't know how to use.
It's
and
like overwhelming.
It was
right?
way overwhelming. And they really, a lot of them got lost in
right.
just like a whirlwind. So this is what I don't want to happen to folks who have been in that mindset of the abuser makes every choice. They tell me where I can go, what I can do, how much I can spend. And now I have all these choices and all these freedoms. What am I going to do with my life?
Right. That's almost just as paralyzing, right?
It's very much so. Yeah, it can really lead you into an even more abusive situation than you were already in, possibly. You
wow.
know. And so we're going to have some things that address that too, which, you know, again, that's not something you can get just from any LMS.
Right. And so the agencies you've talked to, how have they helped you kind of shape this?
Well, they've said to us, these are the specific needs that we have. This is our demographic of our average victim who comes in, and this is what they need to see. And so focus heavy in this area. We've had folks who have said, if you can give us Spanish language content,
all right,
we will
different languages,
we will
sure
flood your gates. And we also know that there's a huge Asian community that needs right a lot of help. That's a little more of a challenge because of the variety of dialects right and different, you know, but we're going to work in that direction. We have a woman on our staff who speaks four languages and reads and writes and develops fluently wow in all four languages. So, and she has a Korean background and she has Spanish and Portuguese. And so, I mean, she can go a lot of different directions with her development style. And, you know, we know that we can't get ahead of ourselves because we want to serve everybody right now,
right,
but we know that's not possible. Mm-hmm. But we do feel like if we start with English and Spanish
right
and then build from there, we're going to be serving a whole huge community that really needs it.
Now, do you think you're going to be able to make it affordable right out of the box? Because there's still got to be some costs associated with this. Or do you need sponsors? Or
well, we have set up the foundation. So we're a public charity, 501c3. I get those backwards sometimes. And so the IRS has said, go get donations. You know, you're good to go. So we're right now soliciting folks who have content that they're willing to move away from and give us the rights to, you know, we'll write them a nice receipt for that for tax time, you know.
Wow.
So that comes in really handy because that's expensive stuff, you know. So we will do fair market value on that. That adds to our library,
right,
things we don't have to develop then and
right
we can just add to. So that's very nice. Monetary donations, of course, are always welcome. But we're setting this up so that we can do $25 per learner per year and cover all of our bases and still afford to function and keep the website going and everything happening, and everybody's getting, you know, some sort of a stipend for being there, you know, not any big paychecks, but just some sort of a stipend for playing. And then we're all going to be able to serve that community that we need to. So the $25 can come from donations. It can come out of the learner's pocket. If they say $25, I have the means to do that, no
right
problem. If the community organization, the pastor, the doctor, the lawyer, the counselor, whoever, a mom, a dad, a friend wants to give them $25 to sponsor it, more power to them as well. If it comes through our foundation, we're willing to write receipts, you know, for tax deductions to anyone who wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the $25 sponsorships are going to be tax deductible. It's just a matter of where it comes from. And of course, if we get enough donations at some point, we won't even have to ask for that because we'll just be covering everyone. But that's our target number, to be able to cover $25 for every learner that comes through.
Now, are you going to help these organizations, like you mentioned, a church? Like a church could do a fundraiser that says, hey, we want to sponsor 100 people this year, so we want to raise $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
And then are you going to give them tools or kind of teach them how to do that?
We'll, you know, we haven't kind of got down that line yet, but what we definitely are willing to do is to be able to show them, to give them, you know, like nice glossy, you know,
so you have
marketing materials.
To, right.
We can do those kind of things.
Right.
And basically if someone says, we have an idea and we have a need and how can you help us participate in this, we're
right
open-eared, you know, to
but
do
like,
whatever.
But like you said, there's a ton of these organizations that could use the service, you know, churches and the social workers and government agencies and stuff that don't have the access to all this learning material that you guys are creating.
Right,
so
right
it's just a matter of letting them know this exists so that they can choose it.
It's right, and it's a great choice to make. And another avenue that we've been working with as well is Andera Seminars developed a compliance program for businesses. And so we have it's been on disk, and it's going online January 1st. But basically, it's a membership where you purchase the membership, and then for $99 a year after that, you're able to just access all of our information, which is everything from HR law, employment law, OSHA law, even coaching on how to collect your accounts receivable, just anything that your business could face, how to complete an I-9 properly. We have documents, we have checklists, we have videos, we have audio conferences. We just have a whole slew of help out there. And the program is called Help Desk. So we're putting help on your desk. And so we've launched that in January of 2014. And since then, we've been taking all of the profits from that project and we've been putting that into our academy. So that's that's how we've been funding our academy, which is through Help Desk. So every time somebody purchases a Help Desk membership, they're not only putting help on their desk, but they're putting help, you know, on the desk
right
possibly of someone who's really going to need it. And I always tell people, you know, you're not only helping yourselves and your businesses, but you could possibly be helping generations of people who will never even know it.
That's right.
And
because
that is
it's
the best
not
thing.
Just the person they abuse, it could be their kids. I mean, you don't know how many people you're impacting.
Absolutely. And then the other piece, we're not only talking about the domestic violence, we're talking about people who are at risk. So let's say we have foster children who are coming into the 16-year-old range. Let's go ahead and get them into the academy, because if they're not adopted and they're going to be aging out of the system, they're pretty much going to be on their own to a large extent.
At age 16?
No, at 18.
18.
But we'll get them in at 16 to start educating them along right. with their high school, hopefully. And so then when they get out, if they've graduated high school, they age out of the system, they have that, they have all of their academy courses they've taken, and they are, at that point, even though they don't have a college degree, they are highly employable
right.
because they have a lot of knowledge that right. folks my age may not even have at right. that point if they have really worked our academy.
That's right.
And so they're going to have some options there that, and of course, if they've aged out and they're struggling, we're opening this up to homeless shelters. If the caseworkers and the volunteers have folks who are coming through that they see are trying to pull themselves up and make it and, you know, get jobs.
Right.
And
I bet they're just hungry for tools like this.
Yeah. And these are the folks that we want to get them in the workforce. We want to help them even become entrepreneurs eventually.
Right.
And we want to address those folks, because I got to tell you, if I had had tools like this, I wouldn't have had to stick around 12 years,
right?
You know, and so, you know, it's just kind of my
is the foster children, or is that a big issue? Are there a lot of kids that are aging out of foster?
Yeah, there are. As a matter of fact, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me right now, but at any given time, there are close to 500,000 children ready for adoption at any given time. All over the country. Now, those are just the ones ready for adoption. There are a lot of children who stay in the foster system their entire lives, but their parents never have their parental rights revoked. And so those children are never eligible for adoption. However,
the parent has to revoke their rights in order for the child to be adopted.
The parent either has to give them up or the court has to take them away. And in the United States, which can be a good thing and a bad thing sometimes, it's not the easiest thing to take a parental right away. Like in Russia, for instance, you can have someone's rights revoked in 6 months, you know,
right.
but it doesn't work that way with us. And so that's a good thing, but it can also be a very challenging
sure.
thing for someone who really would like to be adopted,
right.
you know. So there are some folks out there who are in the system and they're just going to age out without the opportunity for adoption, you know. So that may be a situation, too, that we're not just looking at folks who are eligible for adoption. Those numbers
right.
are much bigger than what.
And these people may not be abused, but this information will be valuable for them.
Oh, absolutely, because when you become 18 and you're on your own, you're no longer being cared for by the state. No matter how good or bad that care may have been, you still don't have it available. Now you're on your own. What are you going to do with yourself? Who are
right.
you going to return to? Who are you going to rely on?
And yeah, where's your support system?
And if you don't have one, what is the next step normally? Well, that's normally going to be something related to crime and poverty and the
right.
stuff that we want to keep people out of, which just opens that great big wide door for either being abused,
right.
becoming an abuser.
Right, it becomes a vicious cycle.
Yeah, we want to break that cycle.
Well, I'll tell you what has just become abundantly clear for me. If a female friend of mine or a child were to come to me and confide in me that they were suffering abuse, I would do what I could, but I would be winging it. I don't know what to do. I could use education and how to support someone once I discovered. I mean, I've never really even thought about it from that perspective.
You know, that's a really great point. And we go out and educate businesses all the time because OSHA has the big workplace violence push, which
mm-hmm.
you turn the news on, you see right. somebody getting shot at somebody's workplace.
Yeah.
But we don't think of it as workplace violence. We think of it as other tragedies, but it is also under OSHA workplace violence. So we talk to employers about that. And just on the domestic violence aspect, because this is one awareness piece that I work with in workplace violence. If a woman or a man, whoever, is being abused, their abuser 74% of the time will bring it into the workplace. Now, whether it is directly coming to the workplace or whether it's just through incessant phone calls or text messages or somehow, this is going to infiltrate.
It'll impact their...
Yeah, mm-hmm, it's right. going to. Now, heaven forbid that they show up at the workplace with a gun or, you know, some other violent act,
right.
then we're impacting everyone around us with the domestic violence situation. So to your point, we educate folks on how do you recognize the signs of abuse? because when I was being abused, believe me, that was the last thing I was going to share with you. Because I did not want anyone to know that was my hidden shame, my hidden secret. So I'm a really good liar. I'm a really good actress, you know, in those moments. And so if I did confide in you and you finally did know, then what are you going to do with me is your big question. And so by educating folks in the workplace, then we're helping to people to identify that and to know how to talk to someone who's abused. Because if you do have someone, the last thing you ever say to them is, why in the world are you staying with that person? And you need to, you know, you can't do that, because we have to understand that they're not probably ready to hear that. And so there are ways to do it. So on our website as well, we're going to have, you know, outside of the Academy videos, just our spoonfuls of what do you say to that friend that you have, or that coworker or family member who you want to listen
to
you so desperately.
Just to have the conversation, these initial conversations, where they maybe can crack the door open a little bit.
Right, yeah. And we have another website, isitabuse.com. And isitabuse.com talks mainly to the abused, but identifies a lot of, you know, if you're not convinced you're being abused, look at these things and decide, you know, if you're wondering.
Because there's a level of denial on
Right. And there are levels of, like, what actually is abuse, too. We don't want everybody in the world to become paranoid and suddenly everybody you know is an abuser. You know, it's not like we're trying to promote that at all, because, believe me, there are some folks who come out of my background that just look at everybody as an abuser.
Right.
You know, and that is not the case at all. And we do not want to promote that.
Right. Well, if somebody wanted to learn more, what are the best websites to go to?
AndaraFoundation.org. is going to give all the information about our foundation and our programs and our foundation, including the Academy.
And that's A-N-D-E-R-E Foundation, right?
Right, yeah. And so that's the best one. And then, of course, we have AndaraSeminars.com, which just talks about everything we do.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.